Superchargers, headlights, and more. With over 122 million parts, eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Stay on your A-game with all the parts you need at the prices you want. It's easy to bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Your spring is about to get a lot more power with the Home Depot. Get gas-like power from mowing, trimming, and blowing with the Ryobi 18-volt OnePlus system starting at just $89. Mowing power that can take on a third of an acre with one charge. Trimming power with up to 2 hours of runtime. And blowing power with 110 miles per hour of clearing force. All on one interchangeable battery. Get cordless gas-like power for the entire lawn with the Ryobi 18-volt OnePlus system. Only at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
The rosters for the NHL All-Star Game in February have been announced, and my co-host is going to be really upset because Bob Probert will not be participating. Let's welcome the 16-time world champion, the star of the show. He is the nature boy, Ric Flair. And H, I miss Proby. Proby used to come backstage once in a while at WCW, best fighter in history of the game. He left us far too young. I get a little sad when I think about him.
Yeah, I do too. I actually watched that documentary on Netflix about five times.
It was very sad. But boy, he packed a lot of living in a relatively short life. Yeah. We got to do a hockey show one of these days. Just talk about Bob Probert.
I know.
And as we've often said, I think the best hockey player of all time is Mario Lemieux, but the Nature's going to stick with Bob Probert, and for entirely different reasons.
The most exciting was Bob Probert.
Okay, I'll put him right up there. Now, Nate, before we get to the wrestling portion of the program, I'm going to go off the board. Before we started today's taping, I was watching Hoosiers, the movie with Gene Hackman.
Yes.
On cable. What is your favorite sports movie of all time? Is there any one or two that you could narrow down to?
The one that I really enjoyed, Brian Song.
Wow, that's a long time ago.
Yeah, I mean,
my James Caan and Billy Dee Williams, right?
Yeah, and the Gale Sayers deal. It was unreal.
Right, like Brian Piccolo was Gale Sayers' teammate back with the Bears in the late 60s. And he got, I believe, cancer and passed away very young. It was about their friendship and about that story.
Yep, it was absolutely amazing. I also like the one with... Was it Jamie Foxx?
Any Given Sunday.
Any Given Sunday.
With Al Pacino. That was an excellent movie, too.
Seeing LT and the guys in real life, knowing.
LT playing himself.
Exactly, yeah. I loved it.
Yeah, my favorite is Slapshot, of course. I'm surprised that wasn't higher up your list. Bob Probert could have starred in Slapshot. Actually, in that vein, I want to just give a shout out. Steve Carlson, one of the real life Hanson brothers, is undergoing cancer treatment as we speak, and it looks like it's going okay. So get well to Steve Carlson. Now, to get to the wrestling portion of today's program, AEW just did a Saturday special, the Battle of the Belts. And before we talk about what went on there, I want to go back to your appearance, your match with Sting at the first ever Clash of Champions, which, if memory serves, was the first ever TBS primetime special for wrestling. It popped a big number and it made Sting. What are your prevalent memories of that clash, Nate?
Just that I had an opportunity to work with, I saw so much in him in terms of charisma. His look was a very, very unique look at that time. I mean, I didn't even compare the word to Sting. I mean, in that first, obviously not in-ring work, but I just thought Steve, what landed that it factor. And I'll tell you what, to tell somebody you're going to go, I think we went 55 minutes, but I was thrilled. He never got tired. We just We did simple stuff, nothing, but no, you know, moonsaults or anything, but we just did simple stuff that I could do. And, you know, I like to think it did help.
Oh, no, let me do the honors. It made Sting. And certainly he earned it and did everything after that to earn it even further. But I thought that match, I think it was a 45-minute draw, and you were in the Scorpion at the bell. But,
yeah.
But I'll tell you what made it for me, the way that he did his comebacks against you and you sold him, like when he would no-sell the chops and beat his chest and do the scream. I mean, that was what brought the crowd up. And, again, I think those moments in particular made Sting.
Well, we just – it's funny because I just called that in the ring because it's hard – to me, there's a certain number of guys that you can do all that with, and the people will believe it because the way they look and the charisma he brings with it. And, you know, like I used to put the figure four, and he'd lay down, and he'd sit up and then beat on his chest. I mean, he was just super charismatic, just a great guy. But a lot of that stuff, we just winged it. I'd say to him, hey, I said, what do you mean? I said, don't sell this. And I would knock him. He let me knock the living shit out of him. So he was just like Steamboat. He didn't care. A lot of guys didn't like
it. It was excellent. And did you know going into that match that Sting could be that good and be that big, or were you kind of like hedging your bet with him beforehand? How much did you believe before that match in Sting?
I believe in him. I wouldn't have put myself in that position if I didn't think we could do it. Because I don't think anybody would intentionally take this kid who was so good, you know, who had such a great look, put him in there with me for 45 minutes, knowing that I'm in decent shape. I think everybody believed in him. And ultimately, which he acknowledges all the time, I'm very happy of that he had helped launch his career. And but it's one of those things that I helped launch his, he helped create a longevity to mine. Does that make sense?
Oh, no question about that. That was definitely a two-way street. And, he became an even bigger star, and for such a long time. I mean, look, he's still on TV today at age 62 and still way over. So, but that is, to my mind, where it all began. So full credit to both of you. Now, AEW's Battle of the Belt special on Saturday night drew 700,000 viewers, which is about 30% less than their show does on Wednesday. The Clash of the Champions always did higher numbers than TBS's Saturday show. So, how should AEW and Tony Khan look at that show? Is it a success, a disappointment? What do you think?
The Clash with me and Sting did a 7-7.
Yeah, tremendous.
Yeah, well, we were up against WrestleMania, remember?
No, I think the Steamboat Clash was up against WrestleMania.
No, we were, too. The first Clash was against WrestleMania.
Well, that number is just phenomenal.
Yeah.
And and how do you rate the AEW special? I mean, to draw 700,000.
You know, I have to be honest with you, I didn't even know about it.
What I'm talking about, well, there you go. Maybe that's part of the problem.
Yeah.
To draw an audience of 30% less than their normal show, I mean, to me, it doesn't say anything good. But there's a bigger question here, Nate.
Yep.
How do we judge a wrestling promotion now? Is it attendance, the cool factor, money, ratings, pay-per-view buys? What matters the most?
Well, I would say in terms of revenue, the pay-per-view buys mean the most. I don't know. I know that both USA and Fox have paid a fortune for Vince's products. I don't know what kind of money Tony makes.
Well, not nearly as much as WWE does.
Oh, no, nowhere close. My God, I wasn't implying that for a second. I do know that I've heard people say that after 2 years, Tony on his own as a billionaire, that company is worth over $1 billion.
What, AEW?
Yeah.
I just don't believe that.
That's just what I've been told. So I have no idea.
I mean, looking from a distance, it doesn't seem to me they could be doing anything but hemorrhaging money. I've been told that their entire TV contract check is eaten up by their top 14 talents, who gets, you know, the guys who get paid the most, like Punk and Danielson and so forth. But and it should be noted they're operating on a different business model because they actually do pay-per-views and they don't have a streaming network like WWE. But to me, Nate, you need to draw money. And that's kind of been lost. You need to get eyes on the product, and that number of eyes need to grow.
Absolutely. And then they dipped below a million again this week. I did watch that show.
That ain't good.
No, it's not. But once again, I think Tony is not going to be. He told me when I saw him on Jericho's Cruise, that's a year and a half ago, or whenever it was, that he was very close to breaking even.
I'll be blunt. I just don't believe that. I see no evidence that suggests that.
Yeah. Well, I don't know why he would tell me a story. I'd have no reason to. He wasn't telling me to lure me aboard. So.
No. I mean, I get it, but I don't know. You see, I think when anything is run as a business model designed to make money, the creatively it will run more efficiently too. There's a trickle down there.
Yes.
But I turn on the TV this week. I see Brody King. I see another new debut. I mean, I see is new guys. I see more money going out. I don't see any more money coming in.
Absolutely. And I couldn't agree with that statement more. And the problem for me is that I'm in the wrestling business and know just about everybody. And I don't know. Sometimes I don't know three quarters of the card that's on AEW.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's a lot of new guys. It's a lot of obscure guys.
Since the last time I visited personally, there's got to be at least 10 new guys. And that was when I saw Tony when we were in Chicago together.
Yeah, and it's probably more than that. And again, I want to see as many people as possible get work because, you know, you're rooting for the guys and girls who work in the industry. But I don't know. I mean, I think less is more. And by the way, Nate, do you know there's a drinking game out there now about this podcast?
No.
There's a drinking game. Every time we say certain things that we retreat to, you're supposed to take a drink. So I think you have to do a shot when I say they have 15 pounds of sugar for a 10-pound bag.
Oh, I did hear that. Yeah.
And now they might have 20 pounds. I mean, my God, Brody King's a pretty big guy. Now, moving on. The Royal Rumble is at the end of the month. The formula is... the winners get a WWE title shot at WrestleMania. It's been that way for years. Is that too formulaic, Nate? Would you rather see that, or would you rather see a storyline to set up the main event at WrestleMania?
Well, I think it kicks off the storyline for WrestleMania.
And you just kind of build from there.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, they start in January, and they've got 4 months. To make the winners of both those both the men and women's Royal Rumble, they have 4 months to build that into the biggest match of the year.
When I won it, I wasn't
assured of going to WrestleMania, which I didn't. Make sense? I did, but not the way it was supposed to go.
Well, you winning the Royal Rumble and winning the WWE title is kind of a self-contained story.
Exactly.
Whereas now the Royal Rumble is something that moves on toward WrestleMania. There's a difference in the way it's booked.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, the last couple of years have been absolutely phenomenal. They've had some damn good stuff with Ashley and Bianca Belair and the girls' stuff has been, actually, I think the girls' battle royal is as good as the boys'.
Yeah, no, I think in some cases better. I think in some cases less predictable.
Yeah, no, it is. And, you know, I'm dying to see what they do with Charlotte. She's going to be in it. You know, maybe she'll, you know, who knows?
Well, if she wins it, maybe she can challenge herself. That'd be a hell of a match.
Yeah. Well, she probably could work with herself. I've worked with myself a few times.
Oh, I've seen it. Now next week's show.
Yes.
Next week's is going to be an in-depth dive into the 1992 Royal Rumble, which you won, 60 minutes, WWE champion, great promo afterwards. But just to give a little bit of a tease, how do you not get lost in the ring during the Royal Rumble? How does everything come off so relatively organized with so many men and wrestlers coming and going every couple minutes?
Well, in this situation, and one of the reasons that is, I think, so highly thought of in history is there's probably 18 guys in the Hall of Fame. I mean, everybody in that ring that night had name recognition. Everybody had a successful career. And it was like the start of Shawn. You know, I mean, that's kind of, that didn't kick off Shawn, but I mean, he was young in that. I mean, look at the guys that were in that damn thing. It's amazing. And I just feel like, you know, it was the guys that were in it, number two, which means they know where they're to be successful in those. You need to know where you are in the ring at all times, especially if you want to take a bump for a guy, because you can be knocked, you land on top of somebody, you can get hurt. You know, you just need to know where you are. And, you know, I guess I was 42 years old and I've been in the ring a lot. So, and then a lot of battle royals with Andre in the old days. So just knowing where we are. And then the key to it is to be fresh enough to feed the guy coming in. That's how the guy, you give this guy a 30 second all out, you know, whoever's in there feeds and gives this guy who's coming down the ring, the next entrant, the best possible feed you can. That's the key to it, you know.
Well, and it should be noted,
I'm good at that.
All right, and in that 92 match, every single guy who entered the ring came right at you, right? Yep. At you.
They know who's going to take the bumps for them.
And that was, woo, the design. We know whose day that was, and it turned out to be one of the crowning achievements of your career. Now, how tired were you at the end of that 60 minutes in 1992, or was the adrenaline just really pumping?
Well, Mark, I've been doing that. I had been wrestling hours my whole life, so I wasn't the least bit tired.
Wasn't that a different kind of hour, though, with everything to keep track of and all the different guys? I mean,
it is, but I was born to do that. For some reason, the hours, I never got tired doing an hour. I got, I know it was, I've done more than anybody else alive. But I know my body was built for that for some reason. I've been, you know, blessed. And I like feeding guys. And the fact that you're feeding guys that are already over, which is sometimes not the case now, it creates more of a rush. Well, you were there. You saw it.
Right. Oh, no, it was awesome. It was awesome. Yeah. And like one thing we'll talk about at length next week was my experience, because I didn't know, you didn't tell me, I had no idea it was going to happen, which was great for me because the anticipation, watching from the stands, the build, seeing how it was playing out. And I got to be honest, Nate, and I should save this for next week, but even at the very end, when there were like five or six guys left, I said, my God, he's still out there. This really gets him over. But I still wasn't sure you were going to win. So it was really built to the end perfectly.
Well, it certainly was for me. I couldn't have been happier. Oh, I celebrated it. Hey, the general was there. Remember, he came.
I know.
Yeah, we all went to the Hilton, right?
Yeah, it was another night to remember on many levels.
Another night to remember. Another night to remember, another flight to catch.
Well, and speaking of which, we're just days away. We got the live podcast on Friday, January 28th at Hot Shots in O'Fallon, Illinois, right across the border from St. Louis, which is the site of the Royal Rumble. The very next night, we got a few general admission tickets left, and it is going to be a wild scene. I just might have a few Coors Lights.
Well, so I will guarantee you I'll have several more Mick Ultras, and we will shoot.
No doubt. That's going to be memorable. That's going to be all the way live. That's going to be no holds barred.
Our first road trip, but far from our last.
Well, let's hope. Let's hope we survive this one. I've had my doubts a couple times before.
We got Dallas next.
It's Mark Madden for Woo Nation Uncensored to talk about paintyourlife.com. When I heard about paintyourlife.com, I thought, what a great idea for a gift to birthdays, anniversaries, weddings. But I figured it must be expensive. It's not. Let me go into detail about paintyourlife.com. If you want to give a truly meaningful gift, you got to try paintyourlife.com. Get a professional hand-painted portrait created from any photo at a truly affordable price, or combine photos of people or places you love into one painting. They got a team of world-class artists. You can work with them until every detail is perfect. It's a user-friendly platform. It makes it easy to order a custom-made hand-painted portrait in less than 5 minutes. It's fast. Get your portrait in as little as 2 weeks. Send any picture, yourself, your kids, family, a special place, someone you loved who isn't around anymore. The list goes on and on. Even an action shot of you or your children playing your favorite sport. It makes the perfect birthday, anniversary, or wedding gift. It's meaningful, it's personal, and it can be cherished forever. Nate, you know the magic of paintyourlife.com. Talk about it.
It's an absolutely fabulous concept. I've seen their work. They did a fabulous portrait of Megan and Conrad, my beautiful daughter and Conrad. And now they're painting one of me of a picture I sent in the pink robe, which everybody thought was one of my better robes that I've owned over the years. So I'm excited. I feel honored.
I'm going to get paintyourlife.com to do a portrait of me wearing the black butterfly robe. That is what people want to see. At paintyourlife.com, there's no risk. If you don't love the final painting, your money is refunded, guaranteed. And right now, as a limited time offer, get 20% off your painting. That's right, 20% off and free shipping too. To get this special offer, text the word FLAIR to 64,000. That's FLAIR to 64,000. Text FLAIR to 64,000. Paint your life. Celebrate the moments that matter most. Terms apply. Available at paintyourlife.com/terms. Again, text FLAIR to 64,000.
Woo!
NMLS number 65084, Equal Housing Lender. Whew. Christmas is finally behind us, but are you dreading those credit card bills headed your way? Well, here's a pro tip. Don't get stuck making minimum payments in the new year. SaveWithConrad.com can help you get rid of your credit card debt just like that. Oh, and we're going to get you the best deal on a mortgage you've ever had. But how's this for starters? No payments until March. You don't need money out of your pocket or perfect credit. So find out how much money you can save for free right now at SaveWithConrad.com.
Well, let's get to our friends and foes segment. We're going to lean on tag teams today. First off, who are the top three tag teams in wrestling today?
Usos number one.
Okay.
They're incredible, in my opinion.
I think so, too. I wish they did more traditional and pure tag team matches. Yeah. They're often out there with Roman Reigns and involved in a lot of his stuff. And don't get me wrong, that is great. It's one of the highlights of the WWE product right now. But I'd like to see them get a 30-minute match once in a while. I know they have it in them, and when we've seen them do it, they've been great.
Yeah, I like them, and I like FTR, right? And the third would be, I really enjoy Dominic and Rey.
Oh, they're coming on, aren't they?
Yeah. They all hit, well, that Dominic has just come so far, you know, from a kid that, when he first came, he couldn't work on it. He couldn't work from his left side because in Mexico, you're trained to work with the right arm. You know what I mean?
Right.
You're aware of that, right?
Yep.
So when he first came up there, even a guy like Manny, it took a guy like Manny, as great as Manny is, our Andrade, they had a hell of a match because Manny could work both ways too. It's like being ambidextrous. And I'm not ambidextrous. I can't work. When I was wrestling down there a couple of times, it took me a while to catch on to that.
Well, it's a totally different way. It's like working in a mirror, isn't it?
Exactly. Absolutely.
Now, Ray and Dominic. Here's my top three, Nate.
Okay.
I go with FTR number one. I go with the Usos number two. I go with the Young Bucks number three.
Oh, forgot
and
about
I wish
Bucks.
I saw the Young Bucks work a little bit more. They're not getting the amount of matches. I know one of them just had COVID. And I wish that Santana and Ortiz in AEW got more matches because I think they're really good, but they really don't get many tag matches. They've not really been in the title picture, so they're not featured much.
Yeah, that's my bad for leaving the Bucks out. Because you're right. I haven't seen them on TV in a while, but they are absolutely incredible. And really two nice kids too. I mean, I guess for me, because I like all these guys so much that it's hard for me to draw a hard line because if I don't mention them, then, you know, Rick doesn't think we're any good. And that's not the truth. There are a lot of good ones, but if you ask me the three, I'm going to have to put the Bucks ahead of Ray and Dominic.
Yeah, again, there are a lot of great tag teams out there. Yeah,
yes.
I just like FTR because they're so fundamental. And they work a pure tag team style. I put the Usos second for all the reasons we've talked about. I put the Bucks third because they haven't been involved in a lot of matches. But I think on the day, the Bucks are the best tag team around. And I think they've probably been the best tag team over the last 5 years. If you look at achievement over the last 5 years, they might well be number one. Now, are the Hardy Boys the best tag team ever? Is that a possibility? Because that's kind of who I have up there.
Oh, at one time they were. Yeah, they certainly were at one time. And that, once again, we're talking about different generations. Believe it or not, they were the best tag team back in,
They were the best of their generation. I think that's absolutely fair to say.
Yeah, very fair. I'll tell you who else was a damn good tag team was Edge and Christian.
Yep.
Back in the day. But if you're going to go with the all times, that's why I say they should be bracketed differently. Ray and Nick, Arn and Tully. Geez, I don't know. I mean, I'm telling you, Ray and Nick with Bobby Heenan as a manager may have been one of the greatest shows on earth.
Ray Stevens, Nick Bockwinkel, no question about it. Three great performers, three great talkers. Yeah, you're right. We probably need to bracket it by generation.
Yeah.
Because but, Arn and Tully.
In a league of their own.
I have a hard time saying that they're not number one of all time.
So do I. And they should be in the Hall of Fame. I've said it 10 times.
Well,
What do I know?
Well, you know enough to know that Arn and Tully should be in the WWE Hall of Fame.
Absolutely.
Which I 100% concur
every Hall of Fame.
And, you know, there comes a point where the Hall of Fame suffers because of its omissions more than the omissions suffer for not being in the Hall of Fame. I always say that about the Baseball Hall of Fame. My Baseball Hall of Fame would be better than their Baseball Hall of Fame because I'm going to have Bonds and Clemens and A-Rod and Shoeless Joe and Pete Rose and all the guys who were barred from the Hall of Fame because they decided to have a moral compass decide who gets in and who doesn't.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't agree with you more.
You saw Shoeless Joe Jackson play way back when, right?
I did not.
I was kidding. He played in the 1919s. Was on the Black Sox, the guys that threw the World Series.
No, but I've seen footage of him.
Oh, okay.
I've seen footage, but no, I didn't. Of course, I didn't study him. Excuse me. I do remember Roberto Clemente getting back to Pittsburgh.
Oh, Roberto Clemente was awesome.
Okay, what an arm. Man, you know what, he had
just a quick sidebar. You know what he used to do when I was a kid? Here's how old I am. When I was a kid, I used to go watch games at Forbes Field.
Yeah.
Which was the home of the Pirates before 1970 when they moved to Three River Stadium, and now they're at PNC Park. But I used to go as a kid. Clemente would warm up that arm. It was the best arm in baseball history.
Yep. Him and Rocky.
He would warm up the arm. Forbes Field had a double-decker stand in right field.
Yeah.
And he would stand at the bottom of the double-decker stand, right at the base of it, and throw three or four balls over the top of the roof.
Oh, I could believe that.
That's how he'd warm up. It was really a sight to see. Quite amazing. Yeah.
Hey, I'll give you another. I'll tell you something that's true. You remember when Michael Vick was doing the Nike commercials before you? That he could throw the ball 100 yards. End zone to end zone. Michael Vick could throw the ball end zone to end zone. I've confirmed that. You know who else could? A guy named Bobby Lee Bell.
Who did he play for? I don't remember
Kansas
him.
Kansas City Chiefs, Bobby Bell.
He could throw the ball 100 yards. He wasn't a quarterback, he was a defensive player.
I talked to Bobby all the time. He was a linebacker. Linebacker. And I said, Bobby, is it true you could throw the ball 100 yards? He said, ask John Stenerud. Who was the kicker back then?
Yeah, Jan Stenerud, correct.
Yeah, Jan Stenerud. He said he paid me $500 to see me do it twice.
Wow.
Bobby Lee Bell, man. Number 78.
There was a kid. He's in the Hall of Fame.
Of course he is. Jesus.
There's a kid. He had a brief career with the Baltimore Ravens named Kyle Baller.
Yeah.
He was a quarterback. I forget what college he played for, but he was a first-round pick, and he never really worked out. But I had him on my show before the draft because there was the discussion the Steelers might draft him. And his big claim to fame was he could kneel. He could kneel at the 50-yard line and throw the ball through the goalpost, from a kneeling position.
I don't doubt that. Everybody's got something. I mean, to think about that, to think that an outside linebacker, 220 pounds, undersized, but like a I think Bobby Bell ran a 4.440, but had an arm like that. And that's back when guys weren't really weight trained like they are now.
Right.
That's just a gift.
Well, I said to Kyle Bowler on my show, I go, hey, is it true you can kneel at the 50 and throw the ball through the goalposts? And he goes, that's right. And I go, you realize that has no practical application whatsoever. And he goes, you're the first person ever to point that out. Congratulations.
You know what? That should be the NFL should make it a rule that for guys that don't have that for teams that don't have a good field goal kicker, that the option. If you have a guy that can throw it through the goalposts.
Kyle Bowler would have a job.
So now, past the 40-yard line.
Let's talk about the Rock and Roll Express. We're on tag teams today. Ricky Morton and Robert Gibson.
Yeah.
They really took the NWA by storm back when. What made them so popular? I guess just everything, right?
Everything. Handsome kids, could work, a lot of energy. Ricky Morton, like I said, you know, Ricky was just an incredible performer. I want the word great all day long on Ricky Morton. That wasn't the biggest, but he could think about Ricky, man. He could smoke two packs of cigarettes a day and wrestle an hour and just like that. No, Ricky, and what a good kid, man. Robert too, but just Ricky just had the it factor. It's kind of like Ricky Morton was the Shawn Michaels of the Jannetty Michaels team.
Oh, yeah, I think so, too. And one thing about Ricky, and I think we spoke about this on a previous episode, Nate. Nobody sold better than Ricky Morton. Nobody sold as consistently in a style where everything made sense. Everything he sold was totally logical. He did it the right way and for just the right amount of time.
Steamboat, Shawn Michaels, Ricky Morton. Nobody sold like Ricky Steamboat.
I think Ricky Morton's right there, though.
Yeah, he's close. But having been in the ring with both, Ricky's smaller. When Steamboat, the facials on him and the way he'd go down.
Yep.
You don't see it anymore. It's just not there. And Shawn the same way.
Well, part of it is I don't think it's considered to be as important now, to be blunt.
Yeah.
Well, I think everything's about getting your stuff in, getting your shit in. I can swear here. Nate, Punk had a match with Wardlow, who is a really promising kid, and I think he's going to be tremendous. I'm not sure if he's going to be tremendous there. I think, frankly, he's more of a WWE-style performer, but I don't know what his contract details are. But Punk gave Wardlow a lot in that match. He sold a lot. We're talking about selling now. That didn't make a lot of sense to you, did it?
Well, if Punk is arguably their top star, I would always just keep him. He's already proved that he can work his ass off, right? And I would always keep him, you know, in matches in TV where he took more of the match. And unless he's going into the angle like he is right now with the other guy. Considering that he's going to wrestle, have to get up, make a promo with MJF and all that.
Right.
I just would have shortened it up. And I think he's been over generous. I mean, that doesn't make him a bad guy. You know, that would have been my style forever, too. But I just think that he's going into this big program. He doesn't need to be quite as generous.
Yeah, let me play devil's advocate. I think Wardlow's going to be a star. I'm not sure it's going to be in AEW. I think he's more of a WWE-type guy, although I don't know what his contract status is. But, yeah, in general, I agree. But that's the way it is now. Everybody oversells. Everybody has matches that are too long. Everybody's overly generous.
Everybody is an oversell. They just try to put too much in.
Yeah, that's
right. Does that make sense? It's like one high spot, and some of the bumps they take are incredible. And then these incredible bumps, I'm not using that match as an example, but if you're watching these incredible bumps these guys give each other, and I mean out of this world, and then they use a roll-up. Or a run-in for a finish. It absolutely kills me.
Now, getting back to the Rock and Roll Express, when you had singles matches with Ricky Morton, what made those work? Because at a glance, that looks like a mismatch in your favor.
What made it work is he could work. I mean, it's very simple. And he was over. You know, we did 9-hour draws in 1 week.
That was Great American Bash Tour, right?
No, that was just a regular week.
A loop.
Yep. Great American Bash Tour, I wrestled mostly. The Great American Bash Tour was either me and Sting, me and Nikita, me and Ricky, me and Hawk, me and Animal. I had singles with everybody, but or the War Games. The War Games were huge.
Well, and you mentioned that Ricky being so over got the match over, but I think you made him believable too. I think you sold as much for him as he did for you.
Oh, absolutely. Why wouldn't I?
Oh, some guys wouldn't.
He never took a deep breath. And Ricky Morton stayed out with me all night long too. Hell, I fell off my boat one night. I had that big sea raid. Lake Wiley, we out at 3 o'clock in the morning, music playing like hell, drinking like crazy, pitch black. Just, you know, I got the lights on the boat, and I went up to the front and fell off, and I'm in the middle of the lake, right? And I'm with Freddie Floyd and Ricky Morton and Beth and whoever else was on the trip. And I'm in the middle of the lake, about a half a mile each way. So I go, God, you sober up real quick when you realize you're going to start swimming, right? And Ricky Morton knows that I wasn't there, and they came back, man. But it was about 10 minutes of me treading water, waiting, like, that's one time the nature could have never been found. The bottom of the dam.
I love the interview you did with Ricky Morton, where you pulled out the training bra and talked about the teeny boppers that were Ricky's fans. I always wondered, where did you get a training bra?
I just thought of it because it was all these little girls. I said, I've used that line a few times that people I've met along the way.
Well, in this case, you actually had a training bra that you hung up for the camera. Where did you get that?
I went and bought it somewhere, I guess.
I would love to have been there when Ric Flair went in and bought a training bra.
Yeah, maybe I sent someone to do it. How about when I dressed up Jimmy Garvin's, when I dressed up Precious?
Dressed up mannequin as Precious, correct?
Yeah. Barnett said to me, "You're going to cost me TV."
That was your idea, I take it.
Absolutely. I'll take credit for the good stuff.
Now, I want to talk about Robert Gibson, because I thought he was the glue for the Rock and Roll Express.
He was.
I thought Ricky was the sizzle and Robert was the steak.
Yeah. Robert was the ladies' man. Oh, they both were, but Robert ran some heavy numbers.
Well, what about in the ring? He ran some pretty heavy numbers there, too.
Yeah, great in the ring. Great. Yeah, no, I thought they were both, and they're fabulous guys. I mean, to this day, we're friends. We see each other. Nothing's ever changed. And we're respectful of each other. And that's hard to find in this business, because the majority of my friends right now and that are even alive, of the wrestlers, I talk to Hulk, and I talk to Terry Taylor once in a while, but you don't see him anymore. And I, you know, now that I'm not with the company, I'm not going to be going to these shows. And I was close to Orton and then Edge. And I talked to those guys, but it's not like it's a routine yet that you are eventually going to have to get out of. And that's why I'm lucky to have so many friends outside of the business. And that's who, that is who primarily I socialize with.
Now, did it help the team that Robert was a slightly different worker than Ricky? That Robert was a bit more grounded? I mean, they did the double drop kick. They both got up in the air for that. But I thought their slight difference in style really made the team that much more interesting.
Absolutely. That's why. And just a huge ball of fire with a lot of color. And then girls loved him, which meant boys were buying tickets. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, and the toughest thing to do, I think the toughest thing to do is get the girls in there, don't you?
No, but now it's a guy soap opera. In the 80s.
Well, now it's a sausage party, let's be honest.
Okay, but you don't understand. When I first met those guys, they were leaving another team out that was incredible, as Midnight Express.
No, we're going to get to them in a few minutes, actually.
Yeah, okay, so when I first met those guys, I was wrestling for Watts in Tulsa. And Cornette was there, and I mean, God, they had a full-scale riot. That Tulsa territory, or that Mid-South area, was a tough, tough area if you have some heat going in or out of the ring. And Cornette was fearless, I got to tell you, because he would get the shit beat out of him. But he came in back every time, and they sold out everything. I could be wrong, but I think that the Rock and Roll Express and Midnight Express probably drew as much money as JYD.
Oh, in Mid-South? I think that's probably correct. And I think probably
a little less, but they're right there. They're number two.
Yeah, they were, for a longer time, too.
Yep.
Because they kept going back to it. And how much did the music and the Rock and Roll appearance have to do with the Rock and Roll Express's success? Because that was kind of groundbreaking in that day, wasn't it? The Freebirds.
Yep. Yeah. And guess who invented that? Michael Hayes. I still talk to Mike a lot.
Michael Hayes invented the Rock and Roll Express or the Rock and Roll concept with the Freebirds?
He invented music.
Putting music with the entrances and so forth.
Yes. Yep. He and Keith Mitchell.
Now, was your entrance music always 2001, or did you have something before that? If you did, I don't remember.
I came out the Sharp Dressed Man for a while.
ZZ Top.
Yep.
And then you went to 2001. I said, that's the only entrance music I remember.
Yeah, Dusty gave me that. Yeah, it's me, Elvis, and Frank Sinatra.
That's right. That's exactly right. I was going to say
that. The big three.
I know who I would write number one.
You have to. The other two aren't here to claim any different.
Now, Ricky is 65 years old, and Robert Gibson's
still working.
63, and they have matches. That's right. They're wrestling FTR. They either just did or they're going to on an indie show. I'm 61, and I can't even get up off the couch. That's amazing because they're still doing okay.
Yeah, they are. Ricky Morton never go down. First of all, God bless the fact that they haven't had, career-threatening injuries because Ricky's not a guy that goes to the gym every day. He just keeps going. He's got a motor. And Hoot has got a special a gift, too. Anytime you can. I mean, my last match actually was, let me think. With Sean, I was 59, and then I went to TNA and screwed around there. So, which I never should have done. But we've talked about that earlier. But to be able to go out there in 59 and still have a reasonably good match, which I was fortunate enough to be with Shawn Michaels. But Ricky, I wrestled Ricky, I can't remember. I may have wrestled Ricky once or twice after I retired from WWE. And he could still go. And he still looks good.
Yeah, he still looks like Ricky Morton. That's what's important.
Yeah, exactly.
And Hoot looks like Hoot as well.
Yep, exactly.
Now, I have to give FTR credit, and we both have them in our top three tag teams. They really pay homage to the old school tag guys. In fact, sometimes it goes a little overboard, but they don't forget who their influences were, and they certainly credit them, and that includes Tully and Arn, obviously.
Yes. Yep. So I like seeing Tully and Arn on TV the other night, too. That's always a thrill for me.
Where did the Rock and Roll peak? You mentioned Mid-South. I'm wondering if it wasn't Crockett in the mid to late 80s.
Most definitely Crockett. Only because it was a bigger territory. You know what I mean? We're talking about going. I wrestled Ricky Morton in a cage in Charleston, West Virginia. I mean, part of the Great American Bash. We just sold out everywhere. And, the next night I'd wrestle Ronnie Garvin. The next night I'd wrestle Dusty. The next night I'd wrestle Sting or Luger or Nikita. I mean, we had a hell of a crew back then. And I'll say it, I've been saying it for 30 years. If we had just stayed east of Chicago, we would still be in business.
I agree. I totally agree. It went too far too fast.
We were killing in Baltimore. We were selling out the Civic Center in Philadelphia. We sold out everywhere in the South, and the South was becoming bigger. By that, I mean we went from Richmond to Baltimore to Philly. I mean, sold out everywhere, for a couple of times we went up to Philly. We didn't have anything except me and Magnum and me and And me and Steamboat going an hour, and then me and Magnum going an hour, and then coming back, and we finally built it where we're sold out. And we would be sold out at the same time that the WWE was in the Spectrum. And then we'd all go back to the Marriott and party.
How come the Rock and Roll never got a shot, a lengthy run in WWE? I'm not sure there's an answer to that, but it's worth saying.
I don't know. I don't have the answer to that either.
Did they fit the WWE mold? I mean, they were real small for WWE, and they were too Southern for WWE too. And that was a factor no matter what they might say now.
Well, that could be very true because, you know, when I went up there and was working with Hulk, we came down in the South, man, and Hulk was not well received in the South. You know, we had to put, you know, that they accepted us for what we were, and to them, NWA was wrestling. It wasn't a WWF or WWF at that time. And we had to put soundtracks in to bring Hulk to TV because they were cool.
Funny you mentioned that because, you know, we'll talk about this a lot next week. And by the way, when this podcast debuts on Wednesday the 19th, that is the 30-year anniversary to the day of you winning the 1992 Royal Rumble.
Yeah.
And speaking of using a soundtrack, Hulk got booed at the end when he complained about Sid Vicious pushing him out of the ring, and you got a big pop when you won the Royal Rumble, and they changed the sound around for that one. They aired it afterward, didn't they?
Oh, I don't know that.
You do. I know it.
No, I did not know that. No.
Yeah, they sweetened the sound to make it seem like Hulk, you know, was getting cheered. But it was funny. I remember when Hulk got pushed out by Sid, and Sid said, "It's every man for himself, big boy." That made sense to me. And then when Hulk grabbed Sid and helped you dump him, that was a heel move by Hulk. And a lot of contradictory stuff there for Hulk's character.
Yeah. Yeah. Who knows? That's a strange time in a relationship that I really am not privileged to know. A lot going on with Hulk and Vince at that time. I think that TV show was coming his way with Thunder in Paradise.
Right.
So there's a lot of reasons why WrestleMania didn't happen, but I think it all started at the Rumble. I didn't expect to win the Royal Rumble, but I was just happy to be there. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, but I think you would have been disappointed had you just been another guy in the Rumble after having come to WWE at long last.
I absolutely would not have been. I swear. I was really so relieved to be away from WCW. All my friends, everybody in that ring I was a friend with, just a whole different vibe. To be in a positive structure, a positive mindset is all I've ever wanted. Peace. To be and I'm sure there was some manipulating going on back, but I wasn't part of any of it. I was just there. I didn't have to argue about anything. I just said, whatever you want me to do, I'll do. And that's basically the way I am at my best performing when I'm happy with what's going on. When I'm not worried about someone wanting to cut my hair or tell me to wear an earring or where I'm going to be the next day. Does that make sense?
You would have made a great gladiator, maybe better than Russell Crowe.
Yeah. No, it was so good for me here, the year and a half I had there. It was great. So I would not have been disappointed because I didn't expect to win it. Now, if someone told me I was going to win it, I didn't win it, then I didn't know until I got to the building.
Well, I think we missed out when you didn't become the gladiator. Somebody called my sports show the other day and said the Steelers were going to beat the Kansas City Chiefs because Ben Roethlisberger is a gladiator. And I said, well, Russell Crowe was a gladiator too, but he wound up dead on the Coliseum floor.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Your spring is about to get a lot more power with the Home Depot. Get gas-like power from mowing, trimming, and blowing with the Ryobi 18-volt OnePlus system starting at just $89. Mowing power that can take on a third of an acre with one charge. Trimming power with up to 2 hours of runtime. And blowing power with 110 miles per hour of clearing force. All on one interchangeable battery. Get cordless gas-like power for the entire lawn with the Ryobi 18-volt OnePlus system. Only at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Nate, we're just a few days away from the live podcast, Hot Shots in O'Fallon, Illinois, right by St. Louis, the night before the Royal Rumble. That's Friday, January 28th. And Jim Herd, the guy who wanted you to be the gladiator, who wanted you to cut your hair, who wanted you to wear an earring, isn't he from St. Louis?
Yes.
Can he's you get him to drop by?
He's coming to the event.
No, he's not.
He absolutely is. Breaking news.
Wow. Is that, are we supposed to keep that secret or can we tell people?
Can tell people we're going to shake hands. Jim Herd,
the guy who wanted you to be the gladiator, will be at this live show.
Yep.
Because I have a few questions for him. I'm sure you do too.
He's coming to the show to shake hands, and we're all just going to become friends like it never happened. And you know what? It's too late. I have I've had worse grudges recently.
So, well, yeah.
Yeah.
Me too. So,
yeah.
You know what I think you should do in honor of Jim Herd at the live event at O'Fallon?
I might have had to have trademarked the gladiator and then had somebody else borrow that down the line.
That's what I mean. I think you should dress as a gladiator for the show.
The earring too?
At least get an earring. Yeah, how could it hurt?
Well, you know, the ding-a-lings are going to be there.
What, say it again?
The ding-a-lings are going to be there.
The ding-dongs, please.
Ding-dongs. I'm sorry.
Ding-dongs. What about the hunchbacks? Remember the hunchbacks? You want to have the hunchbacks?
I know about the hunchbacks.
The we tag couldn't team find could anybody. Never we get could, in because they had hunchbacks.
We couldn't find anybody to dig a hole. That's how you pin them.
Now, next up, we're going to talk about the Midnight Express. And let's start with Jim Cornette, who I do not get along with. But is he the best manager ever? And what did he add to that act?
He's the second best ever. Bobby Heenan's first.
After Bobby, I agree. But what did Cornette add?
Number two, he's fearless. He's fearless. He loves his guys. He's a great talker. I mean, everybody's got a different story. I personally like Jim Cornette a lot. And I'll be honest with you, when I'm around a smart guy, I'm going to utilize him anytime. And that's why I said, you want to come be part of this ridiculous booking committee? I mean, there were some smart people involved. The problem is in other words, like a guy, Jim Cornette doesn't drink. We have nothing in common socially, but he's a smart guy. And in the ring, he's fearless. I mean, no kidding. When he fell off the ramp and Big Bubba was supposed to catch him. Oh my God. I mean, think about it. That's what they were 30 feet in. And Jim takes a bump off the
scaffold.
Off the scaffold, yeah. I watch him for the curtain, and Bubba's supposed to catch him. And I'll kill them both. And Cornette is he's hilarious, but he is by far. There's no way around it. Bobby Heenan, Jim Cornette.
Yeah, I think he was a great manager. Past that, I'm going to need stitches because I'm biting my tongue. But he was a great fit for the Midnight, though, because it was a classic manager and act pairing.
Exactly, yeah. He wore the coat and tie. And the big thing, too, about Jim, he didn't afraid anybody. I mean, I can remember, he's just not afraid. And those guys, I'm telling you, Mid-South, and even in the South period, when they came over to Crockett, those guys worked some pretty heated finishes. And it's not like it is now where no one gets to you. Does that make sense?
Oh, but yeah, like, no. Like, there was an element of danger when you worked in those days, for sure, especially an act like that.
Absolutely. The example of the thing with Seth Rollins that we had fun with, that happened 3 times a week. Somebody hitting the ring or hitting, like, when you're standing outside with your back to the crowd, you know what I mean? Right. And when you are that, because you have to be the guy to pull the rope or trip them or whatever, and your back is to it. I've seen Jim get jumped on 5 times.
Now, which was the better version of the Midnight Express, Bobby and Dennis or Bobby and Stan? And once again, Bobby, as we've spoken Dennis. About often, Bobby was the common denominator.
Bobby and Dennis.
Tell me why.
Just more experience. They were together longer. I mean, I thought Stan filled in and did a good job, but he just wasn't. Dennis Condrey was a hell of a hand. And I'll tell you what, they knew each other so well that it was like me and Steamboat. Dennis and Bobby had been doing that for years, so they knew where they were in the ring all the time. You know what I mean? And then when Stan came in, it's like a whole new learning process to find that level of confidence. You know what I mean? If you're working a long match, so I'm just giving it because Dennis was there longer.
Yeah, I think Stan had a better look, quite honestly. But I agree with everything you say about Dennis and his work. I thought it was a more fluid tag team with Dennis Condrey. Both versions were excellent because, again, Bobby was there for both versions.
Yeah. Hey, listen, you want to know how Stan Lane got into business?
Go ahead.
I'm at the Hilton Hotel with the lovely Elizabeth, Charlotte's mom, right? And I'm trying to be a big shot. So I'm trying to get her drunk at 9 o'clock in the morning, ordering Bloody Marys. We're at the beach. So I order 4 Bloody Marys. This is when I was still working it, right? No, a ship has not sailed yet, but I'm in the process of, you know, throwing the anchor out. So I'm big shot, and the kid comes to the door and he goes, "Oh my God, are you Ric Flair?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "Jesus." I said, "I'd like to talk to you, man, but I'm busy, but I'll be downstairs in a little bit." So he comes up to me and said, "I want to be a wrestler." So I started training him in Minneapolis, in Charlotte.
You trained Stan Lane?
Yes.
I did not know that.
500
please expand.
500 free squats. I trained him physically. I never got in the ring with him, but I got him ready to go. I can't remember where I got him booked at, but yep. Handsome Stan, well, man. Hey, Stan was big. He was, at that point in time in his life, he was big in the flight attendant world, as was I.
Stan dated Vanna White from Wheel of Fortune. Is that true?
No, that was me. 1978.
Is that true? Wow.
One date. Yeah.
Date's a date. That's more than I've had with Vanna White.
Yeah, at one date, 2001. Well, first of all, it wasn't a date. I didn't ask her out, but I met her.
Right, I got and you.
Yeah, that's every time she spins the wheel, she might say, "Nature, but."
I bet you spotted her a vial or two. the Midnight Express invented a lot of double high spots, like the Vegematic and Divorce Court double team high spots. Were they trendsetters in that regard? They were one of the first that I remember to kind of use those consistently.
Yes, I would say so. Yeah, it certainly wasn't Ole and Gene, who were a great tag team, but totally different styles. I mean, you know, I went from Nick and Ray to Ole and Gene, the ground and pound, the grab the arm, ride the arm, from watching Nick and Ray go upside down and all that. And I said to myself, "Well, I'm honored that they're going to let me be their cousin and get that rub, but that's not how I work." Does that make sense?
Yeah.
After seeing Ray Stevens bounce around, that's when I got in my mind, that's what I want to be.
What was the best feud for the Midnight Express? We talked about the Rock and Roll earlier, but also the Fantastics. The Fantastics were a hell of a team, and they had great matches with them as well.
Yeah, but the best feud was Rock and Roll and Midnight.
What made it so great?
Chemistry and a guy named Jim Cornette who could regenerate heat. And you know what? They wrestled each other as many times as Steamboat and I did. They knew each other. Bingo. Never missed a beat. Never. And they were the original.
Well, let me add to that, Nate. I saw you and Steamboat wrestle live probably a dozen times.
Mm-hmm.
And you never had a bad match. Never.
Nope.
Not once. I think the same could be said about Rock and Roll and Midnight. They never had a bad match.
I would agree with you very much.
Did you and Steamboat ever have a bad match?
No.
And you had literally like over 100, correct? Well over 100.
Oh, God. Probably 1,500.
You wrestled Steamboat 1,500 times.
Well, from 1976 until almost the last time I wrestled him, I mean, we were married. You got to remember, in one calendar year, I probably wrestled Steamboat, at least 1,000 times, at least.
Yeah, because you would do months and months together.
We were married. We only had that brief separation when he fell out with Dusty and he went to New York. But then he came back. But from 76 till, God, what, 80? Oh, God, 89, my God, easily. That I'm going back to 1,500 times.
Now, we've been talking about the Rock and Roll.
I could wrestle him blindfolded and tell you I could have a good match.
Oh, I'm sure. Again, the chemistry.
If somebody walked me to the middle of the ring, I could wrestle him blindfolded. I had a sixth sense with him.
Now, we've been talking about the Rock and Roll in the Midnight. Did all those type tag teams spring from the Fabulous Ones, who were Stan Lane and the aforementioned Steve Kern? They were the first of that genre, I think. They were before those guys.
Yeah, but entirely different. Entirely different.
Tell me how.
Just better. I mean, more energy, more charismatic.
Now, do you remember when Cornette's Midnight Express feuded with Paul Heyman's Midnight Express and Cornette bladed and the blood was so bad the TBS went nuts, no more blood, and it was more juice than I've ever seen.
You know, I do remember that, yeah. Well, like I said, Jimmy's not afraid to do anything.
Well, that was the first time he bladed.
He doesn't do it half-ass.
He certainly didn't do it then. Now, the Midnight Express also never had a run in WWE. Again, that's hard to believe.
I know. It's hard to believe they're not in the Hall of Fame. It's funny, they had Cornette induct Ricky and Robert, which was fabulous. But I just figured that just was, they were saying, oh, man, we need to recognize these people in the industry. The Midnight's still not there. And Bobby Eaton's passed, so... Which is a terrible, terrible loss. What a great guy.
Yeah, now that you say that off the top of my head, I it would kind of ring hollow with Bobby not being around to enjoy it, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Why is Wahoo McDaniels not in the Hall of Fame?
Well, it's their Hall of Fame. I mean, I agree with you totally, but, you know, I mean, there's a limo driver in the Hall of Fame.
Who's that?
Vince's, I think Vince Sr.'s limo driver is in the WWE Hall of Fame.
Well, but I can understand that because he probably learned more about the business riding around with Vince Sr. than half the guys knowing it today.
Yeah, maybe. He's a limo driver. I mean, limo driver's in there and Bobby Eaton isn't.
Yeah. Well, I can't.
Well, no, that's because it's their Hall of Fame, Nate.
I could give you some examples of some really other things, but I'm just like, we're not shooting today. Ask me when I've had a couple drinks.
I'm not about that anyway. We'll shoot in St.
Ask
Louis.
Ask in St. Louis.
Now, let's talk about a couple current wrestlers. First off, from WWE, The Miz. You got to respect the guy's longevity, and he's a classic snarky heel.
I think the world of him personally.
What makes him good?
What makes him good is the fact that he never stops wanting to be good. You get whatever they give him. Eat, whether it's, you know, chicken shit or chicken salad, he makes it chicken salad. And to have that kind of a run, I think he decided that, you know, that he was going to make a career out of this, no matter how much he had to go through, you know, humiliation wise. He's rocking it out right now. I mean, I'm happy for him.
Okay, well, we'll do a show on bullying, because you're right. That was very prevalent at wrestling at one point. It really is a black eye on what the industry used to be. How much do you think that had to do with Miz being a reality TV star? Was it tough for him to gain acceptance from the boys at first because of where he came from?
Yes, that's exactly what it was. He wasn't some super athlete with a super athletic background. He's just a guy that wanted to be a wrestler. But he pulled it off. And I'm telling you, they hand him his the work that, you know, when you work through, they hand you your script or whatever it is, right? And he will rehearse it from 2 o'clock in the afternoon until he goes on the air. He walks around. I see him in the hallway talking to himself, applying, you know, and then he'll go to his producer and say, can I change this to this? I mean, he is a perfectionist, and that's why it's good.
No, I think his acting skills, which obviously is what translates to promo skills now, are really good. And the one thing about him, he's never really been a babyface. I think he tried about 10 years ago, but it didn't take. He's one of those guys that being a babyface just isn't going to work, correct?
Well, he's just a much better heel. He's learned how to be naturally. I think it's more acting because he's not an arrogant guy in real life. I think it's more about he's learned how to pull that character off. He's not in any way, shape, or form a prick, which, you know, to be a good heel, you have to have some prick in you, I think. But he just, I'm proud of him. And once again, I can't say enough good about him.
You mentioned before he didn't come to WWE as this heralded athlete. He was a reality TV star. Yet, I think he's become a fairly athletic and competent worker. It's a lot of the basics. I'm not sure he ever's had a 5-star match. In fact, I know he hasn't, but he's credible.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I don't know what his background was, but I don't know whether he was an athlete in high school or not. I've never asked him, but you know, the reality show entrance was what the guy is fed on.
Now, he's doing a tag match with his wife, Maryse, and they've done a few angles together. That's at the Royal Rumble. As you can see, it's Edge and Beth Phoenix, who are also a married couple against Miz and Maryse. Is it a good idea to bring your real life onto TV with wrestling?
Well, let me tell you something. I love Beth and Edge. I talk to them all the time. And I think Beth looks incredible.
Yep, for sure.
As does Maryse.
Sure does.
But you have to remember, Beth was a great worker.
Yep.
Okay, so it's gonna be exciting, because whatever Maryse can or can't do, I can't remember seeing her that much. She'd always been beautiful, but I can't remember her skill level. And you watch, they will find a way to make that a very entertaining and a very cool part of the Royal Rumble. And Edge is just special to me. I love that kid.
Yeah,
anybody can have a ladder match with me. When I'm 56 years old, and I just said to him, I said, look at Edge, I can take any bump you give me, but I don't know, I do not trust myself to be pushing you over in a ladder. So make sure before I do something, you put the ladder where it's supposed to be. So Vince doesn't tell me I've killed this top star. Hey, and once I told Edge, just do something to start the match where I can get my blade out, brother. We'll make this thing right.
You love the blade, don't you?
Oh, yeah. I'm really good at it, too. Yeah! When he jumped off of that, I said, what would be cool that you haven't done? He said, well, I've never jumped off the ladder onto a guy at a table outside. I said, let's do it. So Ashley and her volleyball team were there. They came down from college to Raleigh. And so what happened to me right where Ashley was sitting on her friends. And so Edge put me out there. And man, I tell you, this is real life experience. When a 245-pound guy jumps off a 12-foot ladder on top of you, when the table breaks, which it did, and when you bottom out, you think you've landed on cement. I went, trying to figure out if I was still alive. And Ashley, one of Ashley's girlfriends, she was a middle hitter, was going, "Get up, Nate!" I said, "Nate," to myself, "Get up, Nate! Come on, Nate! Dad, come on!" It was really a highlight for me to have Ashley there and her teammates. But I mean, Edge was just incredible, man. I can't say enough about that guy. He just, shit, he's a wonderful human being.
Let's talk about Dustin Rhodes, who is still going strong at 52 in AEW. Dustin isn't his dad, but his career has been very good, hasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. But no one's been Dusty Rhodes' career. So
right.
That's nothing against Dustin. Dustin done very well.
Now, how tough is it to be Dusty Rhodes' son, especially his first son, breaking in at a time when Dusty was still very visible in the business?
Tough. Just as tough as it was for Ashley with me. As far removed as I have been from wrestling, as far removed as I had been when she started, it was very tough.
As is any second generation kid
whose parent is good.
Oh, yeah. I mean, talk about your tough act to follow. And I remember when Dustin broke in, he did some stuff with Kendall Windham. I think they were the Texas Outlaws or something like that. What were your impressions of Dustin very early? Because there was the impression that Dusty, who was the booker then, was going to push him no matter what.
Mark, to be honest, I don't really remember that well. But, you know, he won't be the first booker that pushed their son. So, you know what I mean?
Bill Watts and Eric Watts at the same time, pretty much.
Exactly, yeah. Yep, exactly. But at the end of the day, Dustin pulled it off. And that's all.
No question.
Matters. Yeah, he's had a fabulous career. And he's still going strong.
And
more than anything, he seems to be very happy with it.
Well, yeah, no question. He's training wrestlers now, which we'll talk about in just a second. But I want to talk about when he was Goldust, because I loved Goldust. It was a mid-card act, but it was a great mid-card act. It was something very different. And Dustin didn't seem to have a problem doing what was, at the time, a controversial gimmick.
No. He was not just good at it. He was great at it.
Yep.
It was controversial. But, it's only controversial when people think like that. Okay. At that time, I've seen a lot worse go down, and the kid made it happen. He was great at it. And when Dusty first called me and told me, he said, watch Dustin tonight, man. I went, okay. And I turned and I went, shit, this is pretty damn cool. I've never asked Dustin. I bet his dad came up with that.
I don't know. It wouldn't shock me if he did as well, but I love the Gold Dust gimmick.
Yeah.
If it was controversial, it was because some people were narrow-minded. But I was told there were some wrestlers that refused to work with him because of the character's connotations. Do you know if that's true?
I've never heard that.
I know one who did for sure, but maybe I'll say who that was in St. Louis when we're shooting.
Who is it?
Can't tell you.
Okay.
You have your secrets, I have mine.
Well, my secret, I'll tell you, first of all, you know what my secret is, so I don't know who yours is.
I'll tell you after the show.
Okay. All right.
Is Dustin a good St. worker?
Save it for St. Louis.
That's right. We'll tell all in St. Louis.
Woo!
Still got some general admission tickets left, by the way. I think Jim Herd should have to pay to get in.
I do too. Almost definitely.
He should have to either pay to get in or dress as a gladiator.
Yeah, exactly.
Now,
and open his mouth. The first three words should be, "I'm sorry, Rick."
There you go. I agree. How would you rate Dustin's work? I think he matured into a very, very good worker. His dad wasn't a classic worker per se, although he knew exactly what to do. But Dustin turned out to be different in the ring. What do you like about his work?
He can do anything. He's very versatile. He can work big. He can work small. And that, if you know what I mean by that, he can work with a big guy, he can work with a small guy. If he can't do it, he can take it. Does that make sense?
Yep.
If he can't physically do that move, technically, he can take anything from anybody. And that's more important sometimes than being on the offense. I think he's really good.
Dustin runs a wrestling academy now, and I'm sure he's great at that, no question. He gets it. He gets the business.
Oh, he does, most definitely. Most definitely. And he's respectful. He's nice. Cody and Dusty raised those boys right. They're just really both incredible young men.
Now, we talk about how some wrestlers don't even know how to punch and kick. Dustin throws a great punch, doesn't he?
Yep.
One of the best.
He does.
I think it's his trademark almost.
Yep. Yep, it certainly does.
What's it take to throw a great punch?
For me, it took hanging a string, which Ray Stevens told me to do, in a doorway and hitting it until it doesn't move. And then you tell the guy before you get in the ring or in the match when you slow down, don't move. Because, you know, everybody, you see a fist coming at you wide open. Your inclination is, in real life, of course, you're going to flinch. I need you to hold still or I'm going to bust your jaw.
How many guys did hold still, though, and how many guys flinched?
No, after the people that worked with me, after I was a proven factor, nobody flinched. You know what I mean? But the first time around, a guy's going to flinch because I can make it look like I'm killing you. I still can.
So in between all the drinks.
As evidence of my great comeback in Mexico.
Right,
Conan,
no question.
On Conan. Left, right, chop, hook, boom.
So let me just make sure I have the whole story straight. Between all the drinking and all the late nights and all the parties and all the women, you still somehow found time to hang a string from a doorway in a hotel room and punch it.
No, that was... In the infancy of my career.
Okay. I was going to say, because after a while, your priorities, got to where they should be.
Yeah, the string would have never been first.
This week's episode is brought to you by Super Speciosa, which is kratom, something many of you may already know about. Kratom is an all-natural herb related to the coffee plant. It's been used in Thailand for centuries. It helps energize your mind and relax your body. Super Speciosa is kratom with just one ingredient, pure kratom leaf, which helps you feel good without feeling impaired. Tell them, Rick.
Mark, we know a lot of people who are in pain from taking a lot of bumps through the years, and many of them rely on benefits from kratom for pain relief.
That's right, Nate's pain relief. Taking it as a pre-workout or even when you might just need a little extra courage. I've tried it, and it really is something you can take it and you feel good. But you're not impaired. You can function. Superleaf.com/flair is where to go, and you got plenty of options. For beginners, we recommend the capsules because they're easy to use. If you're looking for a strain recommendation, the green are the most popular at superleaf.com/flair.
Let's take a time out here, and while we normally have a lot of fun on this show, this is a pretty serious topic. Life insurance, specifically Goliath Life Insurance. Let me give you a pro tip. We're all going to die. So before you get a visit from the Undertaker, think just for a second about what would happen if your family stopped having your income tomorrow. With life insurance from GoliathLife.com, what we're really talking about is protecting what you've worked so hard to provide for both you and, more importantly, your family. You see, life insurance isn't about you. It's about those who matter the most to you. Sure, you do a great job taking care of them now, but who would do that if something awful happened to you? I just lost two friends in the last year and a half, one 42 with two kids, the other 46 who left behind a wife and three kids. Thank God they had insurance. And hey, I hear you. Nobody wants to think or talk about life insurance. But think about this. You might not get in a car accident, but you have auto insurance. You might not get sick, but you have health insurance. So we'll protect our car, and we'll even protect ourselves from like crazy medical bills. But will we protect our family? That's what life insurance means to me. Peace of mind. GoliathLife.com streamlines the life insurance purchase process by allowing you to get quotes from more than 20 carriers all at the same time and at the same place. GoliathLife.com. You'll do a fast and easy application and have multiple quotes within minutes. And oh, by the way, GoliathLife.com has solutions for every budget. And maybe best of all, you pick your terms and payments at GoliathLife.com. Once you pick your price, you can start the online application immediately. And check this out. You can even schedule the medical exam to happen in your home. You don't even have to leave the house to do this. And yes, I have done this. They sent someone to my office. It was fast. It was easy. And it was unlike anything I expected. I got to skip the phone calls, the paperwork, and the crazy invasive conversations, and even the multiple visits to the doctor's office that we all hate so much. GoliathLife.com makes buying life insurance simple. GoliathLife.com promises no hidden fees, no upsell, no hassle, hell, not even a phone call. GoliathLife.com is life insurance in your hands, on your time. Get multiple quick quotes right now from the comfort of your own home and begin your application in a few easy clicks right now at GoliathLife.com.
Now, as we've been plugging, we got the live podcast January 28th at Hot Shots in O'Fallon, Illinois. That's right across the border from St. Louis. Still a few general admission tickets left if you're in town for the Royal Rumble, which is in St. Louis the very next night. And next week's show is going to be dedicated to the 92 Royal Rumble, the Ric Flair Rumble, 30 years ago. But let's give one more little tease. Your promo after you won the Rumble was tremendous. Does that promo rate as one of your favorites to this day?
I didn't think of it at that time. That was just off the top of my head, but it was the absolute God's honest truth. I was saying with a tear in my eye, which I did have probably a tear in my eye, several, that I was sending a message that I wasn't prepared to even, hadn't even thought about. So I said, they gave me Mean Gene. I'm standing with Kurt. And you know what? I was saying that I wanted that to be heard so loud in the towers of Atlanta, TBS.
Well, the line that gets quoted all the time is "with a tear in my eye." You see that referenced in promos to this day.
Mm-hmm. Every time Riddle sees me, he goes "with a tear in my eye."
You know what else I remember for that promo?
What?
In the middle of the promo, Mean Gene says to somebody off camera, "Put that cigarette out."
Yeah, I know. Pat Patterson.
Is that who it was?
Yeah.
Now, let's get the marks involved, which is always against my better judgment. We're going to answer some tweets from fans. And a guy named Thirstron Pick asks, "In hindsight, should Lex Luger have had at least a short run with the title in 88 or 89? I would love to hear Rick's thoughts." And that's a good question. By the time Lex got the title, I mean, was it too late? You tell me, Rick.
No, it wasn't too late. But he just, once again, and we've talked about this, he didn't have the time. He was pushed before he was ready. So, and you can't learn how to be the world champion unless you can work with every different kind of performer. So I can't answer that. I have no idea. I thought for sure he was going to be the champion in WWE. So I don't know what happened there. So, I mean, I talk to him periodically. It's one of the saddest stories.
Yep.
That I've ever been around or known in this business. You know, but he seems to be living with it. And, they're doing a documentary on which is going to air, I think, in the next month or so. So I have nothing but good words to say about Lex.
Well, H, my thing about the question from Thirstron Pick is, I wouldn't change one thing about 88 and 89. That was all the Steamboat and Funk stuff. Why would we do anything different looking back?
You wouldn't. But that... that was just, you know, when I went to George Scott and I said, "Can we get Steamboat in here?" And we could have kept him longer, but he just, you know, Ricky was having a difficult marriage at that time, because I would love to have kept Ricky Steamboat around even longer, but he just signed up for that 8-month gig and then he left again. So. Then he came back again one more time for a couple of matches, but I mean, there's never going to be another Ricky Steamboat. Never. He was that damn good.
Here's a tweet from Bob King who says, will we ever see Charlotte Flair against Tessa Blanchard? We've talked about this before, Nate. What do you think?
I don't think so, from what I've heard.
Never?
Never.
Why do you say that?
I've just heard that I don't know the particulars, but I don't think she's going to go to WWE anytime soon.
Right, and Charlotte's not leaving WWE, so I guess that's either there or no place, correct?
Yeah, Charlotte's definitely not leaving WWE. I think she's, as a matter of fact, she was so good Friday night. It's amazing. She gets better every day. She gets better, literally, which is hard to believe.
Well, I'd like to see that match, though, because, I mean, I think Tessa's a real credible opponent for her. But then again, I don't think it much matters who Charlotte wrestles.
No. It's going to be great.
Now, here's one from Pete.
Put him in the ring and Charlotte will polish him.
No question. And has done and will do. From Pete. Talk about his title versus title match with Rick Martel. Oh, I think that was 85 in Japan. NWA title versus AWA title. What do you remember about that match?
Oh, it's great. We stole the show. Do not give two Americans. I wrestled Steamboat over there and Rick Martel. They could not follow it. They gave.
What do you remember about it?
We stole the show. That's all I have to remember. Martel was a working fool.
Well, 60-minute draw, right?
Yeah, listen. So I go. They Gino Brito brings me into Montreal to wrestle Rick, right? And for the NWA championship. And Rick and I are friends, and he was good friends with Piper too. And what's the town just outside of Montreal?
There's a bunch. Verdun?
No, bigger.
Trois-Rivières? I don't know.
Okay, we'll say it was Montreal. So it was either an hour or I beat him. And they fought it all night long. We went in the ring at 12:15 for an hour.
12:15 a.m.?
Yep.
Why did it take that long to get in the ring? Were all the other matches that long?
Because I don't know whether it was Rick or whether it was Brito or Bravo who was overrunning that thing then. He didn't want to put me over.
Martel didn't want to put you over.
I don't know whether it was Rick and just didn't want to tell me, or whether it was Bravo and Brito. Gino Brito.
But why did it take you so long to get in the ring, Rick? Maybe I missed something. Were the other matches that long, or was there a big gap before they went on?
They dragged it out. They made the show that long.
Wow.
Yeah.
And finally, here's one from BJ. How about a few Gordon Solie tales? I worked with Gordon briefly when I got to WCW. What's your take on Gordon, Rick?
The greatest of all time.
Really?
Yes. Oh, my God. I know it's a different time and all that, but I mean, Gordon had that same voice, and he was a technically, you take Ross, you take Gordon Solie. My favorite, but he didn't do color, was Mean Gene. But I mean, guys like that, you just can't replace them ever. I mean, and the level of enthusiasm and all that, and the way that, you know, Gordon was just, I'll tell you a funny story. So Bobby Heenan, the old witty was, right? So this is a Gordon Solie story. So Gordon liked to drink vodka, right? And we would do the WTBS show together, and Gordon and I would fly Delta nonstop into Tampa, and I'd wrestle that Tampa that in the Bayfront Center, right? So Bobby Heenan said, because Gordon has fallen down a few times, that he calls it, when I do the walk and drop him on my face, Bobby Heenan goes, oh no, he's doing the Gordon again. Swear to God. That's the truth. Yeah, Gordon told him he could drink a little vodka.
Well, I got told when I got to WCW to not drink Gordon's water because it wasn't water. It was straight vodka in a glass. No, seriously, I got told that.
Yeah, wasn't he a classic guy? He was a class act, man.
Let me play devil's advocate, though. I mean, I tend to think Gorin's in the top echelon of announcers. I think Ross and Schiavone are probably probably better. But I think Gorin did something that's really impossible. Not impossible, but it's what every announcer wants to do, whether it's with the sports team, whether it's with the wrestling promotion, no matter what. He became identified with his promotion. When he was in Georgia and when he was in Florida, when people thought of those promotions, among the first people they thought of was Gorin Solie.
Hey, I still get asked about Gorin to this day. I know I'm living in Florida now, but that shouldn't be unusual. But Gorin at noon at Malio's in Tampa every day.
You know who else I put right up there, Nate? And I know you didn't work a lot in Memphis, but Lance Russell.
Yeah, Lance is good, but not Gorin Solie.
Who are your top three? Top three announcers.
Top three people that talk wrestling.
Yeah, top three. Play by play, color.
Ross, Gorin Solie, and Mean Gene.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah, Oakland. We got to do a whole show on Oakland.
And by the way, I got to go back to this for a second. There's two other guys that need to be recognized as great announcers. Jerry Lawler is phenomenal.
Yep.
He's as good an announcer as he was a wrestler, and Bobby Heenan on color was the best.
Was I any good?
You were great.
You're great. Sure?
But I'm just saying, when you start talking about announcers, that now, I mean, it's so difficult. Back then, those guys were winging it, like you were, Mark. You weren't reading a script. You were selling emotion. That's what made it real. That's what makes you real. As you have studied the business so long, you're asking me questions like an intelligent guy knows, because you do know. That's when you talk about sports. You go to Mark Madden, right?
That's nice of you to say.
No, when it's real, it's good. When it's something you're just going through to get a paycheck, and I could give you examples of that, there's no way. They're not there for something, but it's big. I mean, it's just really good.
You're
in that group as well.
No, I'm not. But it's nice you to say.
No. You're not because you didn't do it long enough. But I'm talking about for guys that for the years of time, Gene Oakland. I mean, forever. Nobody will ever forget me and Gene, right? See,
no question.
Nobody's ever going to forget Ross. No one's ever going to forget Gorin Solie.
And Schiavone, and Lance Russell. There's a list.
Yeah.
I don't want to expand on me being an announcer, but my big problem was I thought I knew everything, to be honest, when I got the chance.
Yeah.
And I was too hard of a heel. Gene told me that once, and I should have listened to him better.
Yeah.
Gene said, when you heel on the baby faces, show frustration about, they're so good. My guy should beat him, but he can't. What's he got to do? Stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like Bobby did that really well. Bobby would say, Hulk Hogan, I hate him. He's so good. He's so strong. Rick Rude's just an inch away. He has to find a way to beat Hogan. They got to put an end to Hulkamania. But
there you're right now. You should be working for WWE right now.
Let me tell you something. With what I've learned, and this will make people really glad I said this. With what I've learned and my experience just talking into a microphone since then, I would be better than all but two or three of the people doing it right now. There's no question.
There you go. I'll give you that same pat back. You just demonstrated it.
Yeah, but I'm too old now. I don't want to go on the road anymore except to St. Louis with you.
Well, you're going on the road, and then we're going to Dallas for WrestleMania. Woo-hoo. Then we're going, woo-hoo. whether you like it or don't like it, learn to love it. Mark Madden, the Nature Boy, Ric Flair, Uncensored, Nation, whatever we are, on the road. Look at it all that we can look. Stop profiling.
And let's not forget our great producer, Steve Kaufman.
Steve, too.
We got to get Steve on the road, right?
Steve, do you drink?
Steve, can you get on mic? Do you drink? Would you like to drink? Would you like to learn how to drink?
I am well aware how to drink. That's why I'm 4.5 years sober.
Oh wow.
God. Well, hey, stay home.
Good for you, Steve. I wish I had your willpower.
I was for a year when I was sick, and then 35 days. But it didn't stop me.
Yeah, but Rick, you have a better, you're an alien like Arn always says.
I hope not.
Well, Rick, great stuff as always. Next week, we're going to do a deep dive into the 92 Royal Rumble. And then after that, we will be in St. Louis. I'm Mark Madden. Thanks to Steve Kaufman, our great producer. Nate, tell him, talk us out.
Talk us out, man. Thank you for a great show. Steve, thank you for all you do. Marco, you're the man. Have a great time in Las Vegas.
That's right. I'm heading there tomorrow. That's Ric Flair. I'm Mark Madden for
Woo Nation. And go Penguins.
Uncensored.